Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Wednesday edition of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. We are less than a week away from Election Day, so we have lots to talk about on our show. As coming up, I'm going to be talking about how you should read the polls in the closing days, and I specifically want to talk about two pollsters coming up in the second half of the show that you should keep an eye on as we approach Election Day. But first, I want to talk some local and state politics with Patrick Coulican, who is the editor-in-chief for the Minnesota Reformer. Website is minnesotareformer.com. Patrick, thanks again for joining us on the show today.
Good to be here.
Absolutely. So I got to start off with a story that, well, you guys didn't necessarily report on recently, that was in the Star Tribune, talking about how some of these legalized cannabis candidates are basically just, well, recruited by Republicans to try to siphon votes away from the DFL, with the big revelation from the Star Tribune's reporting that Adam Weeks, who unfortunately died a few weeks ago, was the Legalized Cannabis Party candidate in the 2nd Congressional District, and he had a voicemail recorded of him that basically told, that basically said Republicans recruited him to run on the Pop Party ticket to siphon votes away from DFLer Angie Craig. Now, I bring this up, Patrick, because you guys have been reporting on this since, I think, about June earlier this summer, when you had a chance to speak to a couple of candidates who were running on behalf of these legalized cannabis parties who basically even flat out admitted that, yeah, they were recruited to run and they're pretty much there just to siphon votes away from DFLers. So interesting that, this is certainly getting more press coverage now.
Yeah, back in June, I did some reporting on a number of candidates who, as we said, had suspiciously MAGA vibes. They had President Trump all over the social media. They were criticizing Democrats. And the play here is that there are two marijuana legalization parties in Minnesota that are called major parties. And what that means is it's just easier to get on the ballot. They're automatically on the ballot. They don't have to go get signatures. And it creates an opportunity if you're a Republican, because what you do is you get somebody to go on the ballot, one of these marijuana legalization parties, and the hope is that progressive voters might say, I'm going to go with the pot party, instead of the Democrat, because they're motivated by that issue. And so you can siphon off a few hundred votes, and in these state Senate races, a few hundred votes is often the deciding factor. They're also doing it in a couple congressional races. I've discovered another one out in the 7th, another candidate who was recruited. He says he was recruited by a GOP political operative named Kip Christensen. When it came to Adam Weeks, I talked to Adam. He was an interesting guy. I was very saddened to see what happened to him. He assured me at the time that he was an authentic marijuana legalization candidate. I certainly had my doubts at the time, I wouldn't say I took him at his word, but I didn't recall it a lot in print. And as it turns out, unfortunately, Adam was not being truthful with me. And I found out relatively quickly, because we had a photo of him at a Republican kind of confab. He was partying with some Republicans. He'd always been kind of a Republican gadfly or libertarian gadfly, kind of on the edges Republican Party stuff, and they put him up as a patsy. Anyway, yeah, so I published a photo of him with a MAGA headband. I mean, so his claims to be an authentic third-party candidates were obviously not true. And unfortunately, based on the Star Tribune's reporting, it seems like Adam had very mixed feelings about the whole experience and maybe felt he was under a lot of pressure. And unfortunately, he passed away. But the story just showed that it was more evidence that there seemed to be at least a loosely organized effort to recruit candidates, Republicans to recruit candidates to get on the marijuana party line and siphon votes from the Democrats. The kind of skullduggery that, frankly, you wouldn't be doing if you didn't feel like it was needed. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what's happened. It's been quite a story, and I actually think there's more here. I mean, we need to know who exactly was recruiting Adam Weeks, and he says in this voicemail that he was offered $15,000. I have not looked deeply into it, but I'm told that is a violation of law. So there's probably more here. I don't know that we'll get to it before Election Day, but it's been quite a story to unfold.
Well, and see, it's one thing if you have someone who is right-leaning but decides to run on behalf of the legalized cannabis party because they actually are very passionate about the issue, but they have some libertarian leanings. But as you said, that doesn't seem to be a case for a lot of these candidates who are running on behalf of the legalized cannabis parties. And in fact, you were talking about how, well, it would be nice to know who's bankrolling some of these campaigns or at least encouraging these candidates to run. And, well, on Twitter, the Senate Majority Leader, Paul Gazelka, well, may have indicted himself as he was talking about how Sammy McCarthy was someone who was running on behalf of one of the legalized cannabis parties. And Gazelka pretty much outed himself when McCarthy responded to a tweet from Gazelka saying, no, McCarthy specifically was saying that Gazelka recruited him to run on behalf of the cannabis party and said that McCarthy would be rewarded later for running as one of these candidates. So, yeah, there's definitely some fire where the smoke is, for sure.
Well, Gazelka denied that. He did admit that he encouraged him to run. I mean, you could... It was not necessary. I don't think he was necessarily... I mean, I'm not ready to convict Gazelka yet on that, because he could easily have just been saying, okay, you're interested in legalized marijuana, well, go ahead and run. You can be on there. You can be a candidate for office under that party.
Yeah, and that's what he initially said.
There's nothing particularly wrong with that necessarily. Yeah. But then when you look at all these other races and these candidates who are clearly just Republican stand-ins, it certainly looks like an organized effort, at least loosely organized, because it's in a number of key battleground Senate districts. The other thing I would note here is that the terrible irony is, if this scheme works, then it's very bad for the effort to legalize adult use marijuana, because Republicans have already made clear that they're not going to do it. They held one hearing in the spring of 2019, and it was basically a show hearing. They brought up a bunch of people who said what a terrible idea it was going to be. Warren Limmer, he wouldn't take any amendments. They voted the thing down, and that was it. So if this scheme works and they're able to draw enough marijuana legalization votes away from the DFL, Republicans keep the Senate, then it's very bad for marijuana legalization and efforts to pass it. Meanwhile, the DFL is all set to do it if they take the majority. The House already has a bill that's been written by the House Majority Leader. That's a key tell that they're going to pass it. And then the Senate side, I'm sure they'll do it. So if you want marijuana legalization in Minnesota, you need a DFL majority.
So, and going back to the reporting you did earlier this summer, what's generally been the response from the two legalized cannabis parties we have in Minnesota to some of these allegations that their candidates are just there to siphon votes away from DFLers and that they've been recruited by Republicans? Have we gotten any sort of response from either of the parties?
Yeah, I talked to, at the time I talked to somebody from each party. They're very disappointed. the problem is that once you achieve that major party status, which both of them did in 2018 because they each had a candidate receive 5% of the vote in a statewide race, very unusual. I don't understand why they couldn't get together and just be one party. But
yeah.
But once you do that, you kind of open the floodgates. It's really impossible to control who gets the nomination. All you have to do is you can just put your name in with that party. You pay the registration, the fee, and then you're in the primary. If you win the primary, you're their guy. They can't, like in the past, before they were a major party, they would have to have worked with somebody to get the signatures. Now they don't need the signatures. All the person has to do is pay the fee. They're in the primary. They win the primary. Now they're the candidate. And so it's just, and apparently they told me that they realized that this was a problem. This was going to be a potential problem, but they thought it was still worth it to try to become a major party because they would draw more attention to their issue that they care about. But yeah, they were disappointed, and they've, I think, made some efforts to try to push back. They've used their social media channels to say, well, this person or that person is not really authentic, and we don't support their candidacy. But it's a big mess, put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. We're speaking with Patrick Kulikin. He is the editor-in-chief for the Minnesota Reformer, website minnesotareformer.com. Now, let's talk a little bit about how some of these state legislative races have been financed because, well, like the National Democrats, the local DFL here in Minnesota has put together some pretty impressive fundraising numbers for their candidates that are running for various seats in the state legislature. It's been just a really shocking to see the amount of money that have been raised by some of these DFL candidates. And my question for you, Patrick, because I think you and I are kind of on the same boat on this, is that, well, obviously with the pandemic, door knocking is a whole lot tougher to do. So I want to get your take on this. I mean, can this extra money that the DFL raised make up for some of the lack of in-person and door knocking that they typically would have done in a normal election cycle?
Well, that's the question. Kudos to Democrats and Democratic donors for focusing on these state races, because if you go back to 2010, for instance, Democrats just got slaughtered all across the country in legislative races. And that was very important because that was a redistricting year. So the next year, 2011, 2012, early 2012, Republican legislatures around the country gerrymandered the heck out of their states, and they locked in huge legislative majorities and also congressional majorities for a long time. So I think Democrats were very cognizant of that. That's why they're paying a lot of attention to state legislative races, and that's how you're seeing all this money flowing in, and it's been really incredible. I mean, just incredible sums. The problem is, you know, how do you spend it, and how do you use it wisely? The biggest problem I see with legislative candidates is name recognition. For so many of them, are just not well known in their districts. I mean, you know, talking to voters as well as the campaign operations who poll, I mean, they'll tell you that, like, you know, if somebody is known by 25% of its constituents, it's like really pretty high name recognition in a district. Especially in rural Minnesota, it's a little different. You might know your legislator more. They've been there a while, but in the suburbs, you know, there's more transients and so forth. But it's just hard to get your name known. So it's like, well, how do you do that? How do you combat that? Well, if you're out knocking on doors for a year and a half, you can actually meet a lot of people in the district. You can have a face-to-face conversation with them, and they might remember that, or your volunteers can do that. If you're not doing that, this is a pandemic. Well, now what are you left with? Well, TV is very expensive. It's not particularly well targeted. So then you've got mail. When somebody's getting like two or three mail pieces a day, politics mail, I mean, how much, you know, they're going to throw that stuff out.
Right.
And then, you know, you're trying to get your name out with those male pieces, but the other side is talking about how, you know, you're drinking the blood of children and so forth. So, so name recognition isn't always good. So anyway, it's a bit of a conundrum. We'll see what happens on Tuesday. The other dynamic here is that politics has become so nationalized, where, you know, people are just not, they're not saying, well, you know, I want Biden, but I really like my guy who's a Republican in the state house. It's just not happening as much as it used to. And so, you know, you're going to see more straight ticket voting, which presumably, if the polls are correct about Biden being up here and elsewhere, that should be good for Democrats down the ballot.
Well, something else you pointed out in your newsletter today is that, well, when you have big fundraising numbers, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, typically those donors, and I hate to put it this way, but it's true, they're looking for a return on their investment. And obviously we know Republicans are going to be backed by big businesses, but Democrats, of course, also have their financial backers. When you look at groups like Everytown, which of course is in favor of stricter gun measures, you have Tom Steyer's group, fundraising a bunch of money for Democrats around the country. And yeah, it'll be interesting if the Dems do end up sweeping a bunch of these races, where some of those priorities lay, because like I said, well, donors want a return on their investment, no matter what they say.
Right. I mean, I will say that's definitely true. And we'll see that at the legislature, even if it's unspoken, that influence is there.
Right.
People should have no illusions about that. When I used to be in Nevada, it was a little more, they were very upfront about it. They're a little more subtle about it here. and to be fair to your side, or however you want to put it, these rich guys with progressive priorities, rich liberals, you know, they're trying to elect liberals who are going to do stuff that they want to do. It's not like Tom Steyer is trying to get some, you know, special tax favor.
Yeah.
Or a regulatory issue. Whereas, you know, other donors, like, you know, the Minnesota Business Partnership, that they represent the state's largest Fortune 500 companies. I mean, they have a definite agenda. And to be fair, so does AFSCME, the big public workers union. You know, they have things that they want from the legislature. They are giving money to help elect their friends and defeat their enemies. And people will remember, come January, or at least they better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you were kind of pointing out that distinction, too, where, yeah, you look at groups like Everytown with Michael Bloomberg or Tom Steyer. Yeah, those are very ideological driven, versus when you do have business groups or unions making political contributions, they most certainly are looking for something in return. So I think that was a good distinction you made right there. Patrick, I know we are running short on time, but before we go, this, of course, is going to be our last interview before Election Day, so do want to get your predictions on some of these races. So let's start off at the state level. If you are comfortable making some predictions, what do you ultimately think is going to happen with the big prize? That would be the state Senate.
Well, I just hope that nobody's listening and this is not being recorded. I try to avoid...
Don't record in there, Sasha.
I don't know. I tend to think this is a Democratic year. And they only have to pick up two seats. There are two districts in which Democrats picked up both House seats in that Senate district in 2018, if that makes sense. So, in other words, Democrats had big years. I had a big year in 2018 in those two Senate districts. They only need to pick up two. You know, as far as who would you rather be right now, Democrats or Republicans? There's no question. I think I'd rather be a Democrat going into Tuesday with respect to the state Senate. The same goes for the state House. They pretty much go together.
How about any upset specials? Do you have any? It doesn't necessarily have to be a specific race, but maybe any region to watch where maybe we could see some unexpected results in either party's favor. Like I said, this can go by region or maybe a specific race, whether it's at the federal or the state level. But any kind of crazy upset special predictions that you might be willing to go on the record with here on the show?
Yeah, I think that the first district is one to really watch.
I'm with you on that. Yeah.
District. That's southern Minnesota, Rochester being the major city there. I think it's going to swing back a little bit toward the DFL. I think that Jim Hagedorn's troubles are going to lead to his defeat. And I think this could also spill over into the state Senate. You've got two Rochester Senate races. I think it's possible one of them, one of those Republicans, could lose. I also, I'm totally biased on this, but I am kind of focused a bit on some of the folks I consider friends of the reformer, which I say facetiously, like State Senator Roger Chamberlain, you know, would be, it would be certainly interesting to see if the DFL wave, if it happens, reaches that far out into the suburbs and touches someone like Senator Roger Chamberlain, who's been something of a critic of the Minnesota reformer. And so we're interested to see the result in his race and certainly a few others.
Yeah, you are most certainly number one in their hearts, I suppose, especially with Roger Chamberlain. But you bring up a good point where, yeah, that the metro domination of the DFL, that map has been expanding election cycle by election cycle, where, gosh, I even remember just a little over a decade ago, where pretty much that DFL wall was pretty much confined to the 494-694 loop. And, yeah, now it's definitely expanded further and further into some of these exurban areas. And it'll be interesting to see if that trend continues in 2020 and, well, really goes into some of those exurbs like you were talking about with Roger Chamberlain, which would certainly be a massive upset if the DFL were to take that seat.
It probably would be. But if nothing else, a lot of people in the state now know about Roger Chamberlain's dalliance with a neo-fascist, thanks to the Minnesota Reformer.
Yeah, absolutely, and thanks to your reporting on that as well. All right, that's Patrick Coolican. He is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Make sure you follow along with all the big state political news over at MinnesotaReformer.com. You need to support outlets like that, especially in light of the news today that City Pages is unfortunately closing. So a lot of these independent news outlets that aren't going to be bankrolled by some of these big corporations, got to make sure you support them. So make sure you're supporting us here at AM 950 and also the Minnesota Reformer. Patrick, as always, appreciate the time today.
Thanks so much. Talk to you next week. We'll know a lot, hopefully. We'll know everything.
Oh, we most certainly will. We'll definitely chat then. All right, we'll take a break and come on back with more news here on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson.
Taking prescription medication should not be a scary task. The staff at St. Paul Corner Drug makes certain you know everything about your prescription medication before you leave the pharmacy. Knowing what to expect and when and how to take your prescriptions gives you the confidence to safely take your medication and maintain good health. Should additional questions arise, we are here to help sort things out. St. Paul Corner Drug, pharmacy the way it should be, at stpaulcornerdrug.com.
Would you let animals pick your insurance? Do you really need to experience mayhem to get the best rates? Or how about a celebrity quarterback or fake university saving you money? There's a lot of marketing stunts when it comes to insurance, but what you really need is someone looking out for you. Call Array Insurance, and they will work hard to find you the best insurance coverage and rates. So avoid gimmicks and call Cheryl at Array, 763-504-3067 or arrayinsurance.com. Array Insurance, working hard for you.
With all the convenient big box stores that sell appliances, why do so many Minnesotans choose Warner Stellion? Check online to learn that Warner Stellion is a Minnesota family-owned business for over 60 years. Warner Stellion sells more brands than anyone else, and our passionate specialists are committed to impressing you so much that you'll refer us to everyone you know. That's our mission here at Warner Stellion. Ask around. Check us out online. And when it's your time to buy appliances, join over 300,000 Minnesota homeowners and choose the specialists, Warner Stellion.
Nightingale at 26th and Lindale is open for in-person service. They have a lovely socially distanced patio and interior available for safe and thoughtful dining and drinks. Nightingale has reservations via resi.com with plenty of tables and bar spots saved for walk-up reservations. Nightingale's temporary summer hours are Sunday through Thursday from 4 to 10 p.m., Friday and Saturday 4 p.m. to midnight. Last call for full menu 30 minutes before close with curbside takeout by calling 612-354-7060. Info, menu, and updates at nightingalempls.com.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We're back on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Just a few minutes, we'll be chatting with Kevin Chavis. He is a union member and activist with Our Revolution Minnesota. That's the group you might remember that's affiliated with the Bernie Sanders campaign as they're working to elect progressive candidates in Minnesota and around the country. We'll be talking about what that group is up to in the next segment because like really any group, whether it's Our Revolution or Indivisible, it's going to be important to make sure you stay active beyond 2020. That's a fear I would have is that, well, people will be happy with the fact that Biden will be elected, we'll have a Democratic Congress, and people will just say, oh, we did our job, we're done, don't need to pay attention anymore. And that's not the case whatsoever. So we'll be having a conversation about that with Kevin of Our Revolution Minnesota just a few minutes. Want to get to a few quick news stories before we get to Kevin's interview, and I mentioned that mentioned this just in the last segment. Very unfortunate news, but the Star Tribune has announced that City Pages is going to be closing. Star Tribune, by the way, is the parent company of City Pages. It's ending an era of alternative weeklies in the Twin Cities. The Star Tribune says pandemic-related closures led to a decline in ad revenue, which is true with a lot of news publications. City Pages, of course, was a free weekly newspaper and also had a great online following as well. Yeah, it's very sad to see since they do a great job at reporting on the local art scene in Minnesota and the Twin Cities, but also some great news reporting as well. In fact, one of their reporters, Mike Mullen, has been a frequent guest on my show. Susan Dew, who you might remember frequently, was on with Matt McNeil. And heck, even Aaron Rupar, if you remember him, he's currently a big national correspondent with Vox. Yeah, he was a writer with City Pages a number of years ago, and he was a frequent guest on AM 950. They all did great jobs reporting over at City Pages, just all the journalists there. So very sad to see that closure. And again, like I pointed out in the last segment, that much more important to make sure you support your local news sources, whether it's us here at AM 950 or an organization like MinnPost or the Minnesota Reformer. Once these types of news outlets close, they typically don't come back. And losing City Pages is not good whatsoever. So make sure you still support some of those local independent news outlets that still exist, especially the ones that report on local news. That's really the media outlet groups that are going to be hit the hardest by the pandemic, are the ones that report on local and state news. Just go ahead and look at what's happened with local newspapers around the country. We have a big time lack of local news coverage around this country, and that's only going to continue now with City Pages closing in Minneapolis. A few other news stories to point out. Children's Minnesota is eliminating 150 jobs in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. That's the state's largest pediatric medical center, and they're citing the pandemic and need for more efficiency. Again, just showing how messed up our healthcare system is. When we have a global pandemic, we have Children's Minnesota cutting 150 jobs. That's not just a criticism at Children's Minnesota. That's pretty much an indictment on a private healthcare system altogether, because Children's Minnesota, certainly not the only healthcare outfit that is going to be closing, and well, not necessarily closing, but eliminating jobs. So certainly more bad news in that department. And one more thing I want to point out before we head to break. As we get closer to Election Day, and I've noticed this since I'm someone who really follows a lot of the polling data closely, it's always funny. This happens every single election cycle, where typically when you get about 2 weeks before the election, you see a lot of these fly-by-night pollsters that you've never heard of before release some really odd poll results. And a number of them have been releasing some data showing that Donald Trump has been closing the gap on Joe Biden. If you see some of these polls, do take them with a grain of salt, especially if it's from a polling organization that you've never heard of before. If you look at some of the more mainstream pollsters that have actually been polling the race since March, April, and before then, most of them still show Joe Biden with a pretty significant lead. In fact, 538 has Biden's average national lead at 8.6 percentage points. And at 8.6 percentage points, even if there is a significant polling error on the scale of 2016 levels, that still wouldn't be enough for Trump to even capture the Electoral College. Now, that doesn't mean don't pay attention and give up on the race, because it would only take a very small shift in polling for Trump to move back into winnable territory. In fact, usually when you kind of correlate national polls with the Electoral College, generally, if you can get your national polling numbers down to being only down by 5 or 6 points, you do move into a position where you could potentially lose the popular vote and still win the Electoral College. Like I said, right now Trump trails by an average of 8.6 percentage points, but if Trump were to get that down towards 7 percentage points or even lower, he wouldn't be likely to win the Electoral College, but the possibility would still exist. So even though Biden does have a big lead, it would not take much of a polling shift to put Trump back in play in terms of winning the Electoral College. All right, we're going to take a break and come on back and be speaking with Kevin Chavis. Again, he's a union member and activist with the Bernie Sanders group, Our Revolution. He is with the Minnesota chapter of Our Revolution. We'll be chatting with him in just a few minutes. And one more reminder before we do that. We have election night coverage on AM 950. It'll get underway at 6 o'clock with Matt McNeil hosting the beginning of the night. I'll be in at 8 o'clock chiming in with some local and state results. It'll be a combination of me reporting those results as well as the Devil's Advocates guys giving you more a look at what's happening nationally. So make sure you keep it tuned to AM 950 for all of your election night coverage. Again, we get underway at 6 o'clock and we'll go to, well, the deepest hours of the night, depending on when those results are reported and what races we know the results of. All right, let's take a break and come on back with more on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. And we're back on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Well, recently, Our Revolution, the grassroots organization founded by Senator Bernie Sanders, hosted a virtual Get Out the Vote event in Minnesota, where they, of course, were encouraging people to make sure they vote this year in the 2020 election. But they were also endorsing a number of candidates down ballot in Minnesota that share progressive values. So joining us to talk about what Our Revolution is doing here in 2020 in Minnesota is Kevin Chavis. He is a union member and activist and member of Our Revolution Minnesota. Hey, Kevin, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Yeah, thank you, Brett, for inviting me, and it's going to be great.
Yeah, definitely. So even though Bernie Sanders is obviously not the Democratic nominee in 2020, Our Revolution has not stopped organizing. In fact, you guys have been around since, well, 2016, organizing progressive candidates and progressive activists. And like I said, even though Bernie is not the nominee this year, you guys are still very active.
Oh, absolutely. There's plenty of work to be done, and that's what he told us to do after 2016, is keep organizing on the ground and build progressives in local office from the local level on up to national. So we're continuing to do the work.
Well, I really like that you put the focus on these local races, the group Our Revolution, and especially the chapter here in Minnesota, because that's really where you're going to have the biggest impact on your day-to-day life is what happens at the local government or at the state legislature, probably a lot more so than what happens at the presidential level. So even though, yeah, folks who are Bernie Sanders supporters are disappointed that he didn't get the nomination this year, you can still have a major, major impact trying to get those progressive values in government on some of these down ballot races. And I think that's what you guys are really trying to highlight with this get out the vote effort in Minnesota.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of power at the local level, and it's a lot of nuance that people don't always realize is happening in the local level, from the state to county to city governments. And so that's what we try to educate both our members and the public at large about, where we can actually have an impact, because so much of our national media focuses on the presidential election, but there's so many things happening locally that we could be a part of, and we could be training candidates and training members of the public to actually take power themselves. And that's what we seek to do.
Now, with your recent virtual Get Out the Vote event in Minnesota, your group, Our Revolution Minnesota, did endorse a number of candidates running for different offices throughout the state. Can you talk about who some of these candidates are that you endorsed? Obviously, we probably don't have time to name them all, but talk about that and a little bit about what the selection criteria was in terms of who your group is going to endorse.
Yeah, so there's a number of candidates that we have supported. We tend to start looking at candidates very early on in the process, at least our local groups do here in Minnesota. And there are chapters throughout the state. There's Twin Cities, there's St. Paul, there's Duluth, and Rochester, and Bemidji. So we have folks all over the state in local groups. And so the criteria that we look for is, you know, is it a race that's winnable? Is it a candidate that's actually for the people, for average working people, and it's not someone that is just in it for themselves? Do they have a broader vision? A little bit like, you know, what Bernie said, not me, us. Those are the kind of candidates that we look for. And so just to mention some of the folks that we're supporting, we focus on local elections. So we endorse Devonna Pittman for Hennepin County Commissioner in District 1. Now, that's an open seat, and we think that Hennepin County is poised to really make some major progressive shifts. We just need one or two more people on the county commission to make a huge impact. And we know that Devonna, being a county employee and a woman of color, has a perspective that is unique and has not been held by the current person in that district. We think she's going to be great at Hennepin County. We've also supported some of our members running for office, like Janet Katui and Ukasha Dakana, who are running for Edina City Council and have made affordable housing a big issue in Edina. And then we also have folks in Minneapolis that are running too, like we supported Omar Fateh when he ran against Jeff Hayden for Minnesota State Senate in a race that folks didn't think was possible, and we helped him get the DFL endorsement. And now it looks like he'll be on his way to the Senate. So this is what I think is what we think is really important in making sure that we have a democracy that's both functioning and working for us at the local level on up. So I hope that answers your question about some of their criteria. And as far as endorsement, it's our members that do the initial endorsements. So anyone that's active with the local organization, either by volunteering, which is 98% of our membership, or donating some money occasionally, can get them voting rights and allow them to vote in our endorsement process.
Well, I like that you highlighted some of these down-ballot races that don't get a lot of attention, even beyond the state legislature, when you were talking about Hennepin County commissioners' positions or also running for local city councils, because oftentimes when people look at their ballot, if you're lucky, they'll maybe do like a minute of research figuring out, well, where does this candidate stand on this issue? They'll do a quick Google search. And I think it's helpful that your group has put out some of these endorsements and recommendations. So where can people go to find who your group has gotten behind during this cycle?
Yeah, so there's actually three websites, but the main one is ourrevolution.com. And you can just scroll down to Minnesota, click on that, and see who the national has endorsed, which includes all the local chapters in Minnesota. There's also, you could go to each of the local chapters' websites, like ourrevolutionmn.com and then ourrevolutiontc.org. But the national website is a good resource to check out our main endorsements.
Now, part of what our revolution is doing as well here in 2020 is coming up with a four-point plan to move us in a more progressive direction. Can you talk a little bit about this four-point plan that was put together?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the first point in the four-point plan is defeating Trump. We know that he made a lot of promises about actually supporting working people and improving the, you know, the conditions of people's lives in this country. Well, that turned out to be a lie. In fact, thousands of jobs have been actually shipped overseas, and wages have really been stagnating, and benefits. And we're in a pandemic, and people don't even have the health care that they need and the supports that they need to thrive. So we want to defeat Trump and actually move towards a progressive direction. We're going to have to see someone else in office. Second point is to elect progressives to Congress. You know, when we elected Ilhan in 2016, we didn't know she was going to go to Congress, but you have to elect people locally and then move them up in office. And, you know, electing more, increasing the size of the squad is a very important part of our work. And then number three is building a bench of progressives. And that's why we focus on local elections in city council, in Hennepin County, and other counties throughout the state, state rep, state senate. Because if we don't elect progressive champions, they're never going to get to U.S. Senate or to run for president. And then the fourth thing is organizing a movement. And the idea about organizing a movement, because we do have a lot of progressive organizations out there doing great work, but we want to organize those that we've helped elect in office, so both within the power structures, in our state house, and in Congress, to actually support progressive issues. But then we also want to be out on the streets and supporting workers' rights, human rights, social rights, and actually organizing on the ground to put pressure on just not just our elected officials, but a whole host of institutions that really need to change and focus on improving the lives of everyone here in our country and our society.
We're speaking with Kevin Chavis. He is a union member and activist with Our Revolution Minnesota. And something you'd brought up just a few moments ago was the importance of making sure we build up a progressive bench, because this is exactly what conservatives have been doing, even going back to the 80s and 90s, and how they've been able to take over school boards and other local offices, and then, of course, move up towards state legislative races. So I'm glad we're seeing this on the progressive side to get a response to what we've seen from the right wing over the decades and decades. But here's something that has me a little concerned about the movement, though, is that obviously, Bernie Sanders running in 2016 got a lot of people fired up about progressive politics. And then since Donald Trump got in office, people are still very fired up about politics, making sure that we get Trump out of office. But what do we do once Trump is out of office? Because I look back at what happened after Obama was elected and in 2010, when people for the most part just kind of said, well, I guess we're done. We elected Obama. We got rid of Bush. And then people kind of stopped paying attention. So what do you think we need to do to make sure that we don't have that same level of apathy that we kind of experienced after Obama when he was elected back in 2008?
Yeah, I do completely understand your concern. In fact, a lot of people assume that if we defeat Trump, people are just going to go back to sleep and everything's just going to go back to normal. Well, we're in a pandemic and an economic kind of collapse, especially for millions of people in our country. So I actually don't think that's going to happen this time. I think people are going to continue to organize and unite around issues that, frankly, have not been addressed by any of the previous administrations. And, you know, the ACA and Obamacare isn't actually, for instance, one issue, not up to the challenge of meeting everyone's needs with regards to health care. But then you also look at things like $15 minimum wage, union rights, and Congress really hasn't done enough on that. And that's another issue that I think is going to come to the forefront. And I do feel that the Biden administration is going to feel more pressure than Obama did because, frankly, we're in a different period of time. You know, history does repeat, but it's not going to happen in that way this time. I think people are going to be, you look at organizations like DSA, Our Revolution, we have Take Action Minnesota here, and we have unions organizing new workers and new workplaces that people did not think was possible, including coffee shops and restaurants, distilleries and breweries. And I think we're going to continue to see those kind of things occur, even as corporations try to get us to take kind of like jobs through apps, like through Uber and Lyft. We're going to see corporations trying to push that. We're all going to see more people push back on those corporate agenda items that we've been seeing, you know, because people do deserve to live a good life. And I think people want to see government actually work for them for a change instead of the status quo. So I think you're going to see more pressure on Biden than you've probably ever seen on a Democratic president.
Yeah, I'm hoping you're correct as well, because that's kind of what we ran into during those early Obama years, is that even though there certainly was a progressive caucus, they certainly seemed to be kind of overwhelmed by the more centrist members of Congress. And, well, lo and behold, Democrats got absolutely wiped out in 2010. And to be honest, we're still kind of recovering from some of those losses we had back in 2010. So a couple more questions for you here, Kevin, before we do wrap things up. Obviously, with COVID, that has changed everything in terms of getting out the vote and trying to make sure people support some of the more progressive candidates. So what has your group been doing with Our Revolution Minnesota, trying to adapt to some of these different conditions with the pandemic? Because I think especially with a grassroots group like Our Revolution Minnesota that doesn't have big corporate bankrollers, it's got to be a challenge to not be able to really go out and door knock for the most part, for instance.
No, I completely agree with you. It has been challenging to actually meet, but we transitioned to Zoom immediately, like right when the pandemic started. So we have various committees that meet. We have an issues committee that focuses on non-electoral work. Like, for instance, we just had an in-person march for reparations last week, and we also have a local elections group that focuses on doing the work of supporting our endorsed candidates. So we still can meet virtually, and when we do meet in person, we do make sure that everyone is social distancing, wearing masks, that we have take all necessary precautions. But I will say that we are meeting in person much less than before. But there's definitely a lot of energy around actually doing the work and getting new people elected. Every week we have people out, every weekend we're out in Edina lit dropping and for our candidates there, for instance. And then we're making phone calls for candidates in Senate District 55 and 56 Tuesdays and Thursdays. So we're still continuing to do the work. It is not easy, but it must be done. So people are still definitely energized to actually continue doing that. And I see other local groups adapting pretty well too. And this isn't going to last forever. Eventually, we're going to have a vaccine, and we're going to be able to actually meet in person again.
And final question for you here, Kevin, but talk about what made you get involved with Our Revolution Minnesota and even some of the other folks in the group. What have they generally been telling about why they got involved with Our Revolution Minnesota?
Yeah, so I think that a lot of people were inspired by Bernie Sanders, but we even have folks that were not in his campaign that have just been inspired by a local organization that is just really focused on making sure our democracy works for everyone, not just for folks that receive a lot of campaign donations. You know, that we want to actually have a government that works by and for the people. One of the reasons I got involved was because I appreciated that Bernie brought up major concerns about our society, not just healthcare, but also wages and worker rights and human rights generally, and just question the very premise of the status quo. And that is, you know, that's one of the reasons I got involved. And it's an organization, we're an organization that gives people the tools to take their own power. And that's what I really appreciate about the organization. We've trained people to become delegates in the DFL party. We've trained people to run for office, to also do the basic work of door knocking and phone banking, which is really intimidating to a lot of people. I think it's really easy to give money, like $1, $5 to a campaign, but it seems intimidating to really take that next step of actually going out and supporting a candidate and talking to strangers who really are just your neighbors and family and friends that you've maybe never talked about a specific candidate before and don't know how about going about doing that. And so giving people the tools to take their own power and insert their own voice into places of power, like the party conventions or just your local neighborhood group, is really important next step for a lot of people who may not think that that is something they can do. But really, any and all of us can take that step, can, you know, step into power and make our voices heard. And that's what I think is really important about grassroots organizations like Our Revolution.
Yeah, absolutely. And where can people go to get involved with Our Revolution Minnesota?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're obviously on social media. You can check us out on Facebook, Twitter. But then our main website is ourrevolutionmn.com.
Excellent. Well, that's Kevin Chavis. He is a union member and activist with Our Revolution Minnesota, of course, the group that was spearheaded by Bernie Sanders after his run for president back in 2016, as we've been chatting about how their group is trying to get people fired up about the 2020 election and make sure that we get progressive candidates elected to office as well. Hey, Kevin, appreciate the time today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Brad. Have a great day.
And quick reminder before I go today, we have election night coverage coming up on Tuesday. Matt McNeil is going to be hosting our local coverage from 6 until 8 o'clock. Then from 8 until midnight, we'll be doing a combination of taking a national feed from the Devil's Advocates radio show, but I'll also be chiming in with some state and local results throughout the evening. So make sure you keep it on AM 950 for our election night coverage as it gets underway at 6 o'clock and will run until, well, whenever we know most of the results. Hopefully that's sooner rather than later. All right, that's all the time I got for my show today. Matt McNeil is up next.